The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Perfect Investment Tracker. This is a great app to have for anyone interested in tracking stocks and shares. Push notifications with RNS releases, quick access to the latest podcasts and lots more. This is my go-to app at the moment and can't really fault it. It's also free. Not even any ads! Exclamation mark. Thanks, guys. That's from Jake the Snake 600 at the App Store there. And by the way, if you do use our Vox Markets app, like Jake said there, free to download. But if you get value from it, just pay us back there by giving us a decent review and rating on the App Store, and we'll read it out on the podcast like I just did there. Thanks, Jake, there. Okay, it's Monday, the 24th of June, 2019. On the podcast today, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrb.com, or Orbit, I should say, talks about Patisserie Valerie, Porvé, Chemring. I also have on Crypto Trader, the author of that book, The Crypto Trader, Glenn Goodman, who's former ITV News business correspondent. And we just chatted about crypto because Bitcoin had just shot through $10,000. And I think it's touched $11,000. And we talk about the hype of Bitcoin and, you know, what captures people, why people think they can get rich off Bitcoin. We talk about that later. Also, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs too.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good.
Now, I imagine you spend a big part of the weekend. I don't know why I say big. I don't know how big the weekend is, but part of the weekend looking at financial press, because there's often a lot of bits and pieces out on the weekend, isn't there? Is there any news going around today?
Yeah, no, there is. You know, you've got to do that, because if you don't do that, then you're not prepped for Monday morning early doors. And of course, the game starts all again, you know, fortunately over the weekend, thank goodness the stock market's closed down. But obviously, it's a time for reflection. Look, for me, there was a couple of big stories. I thought one of them was undoubtedly the fact that there could well be, by the sound of it, some not only arrests, but also some charging of people associated with the Patisserie Valerie, Patisserie Holdings scandal, which I think is, you know, absolutely right. The more I read of that, the more I think that we all see problems in the stock market and issues and challenges. But I have to say, this whole Patisserie Holdings one, I wasn't a shareholder, but I did follow it very closely, was an absolute shocker. And for the chairman, Luke Johnson, to be unaware, as seemingly that is the case, of everything until it all blew up, I mean, that was a very sort of special sort of fraud. And I'm not surprised there seems to be more than just the finance director being kind of implicated by some of these arrests. So, you know, we shall see how that goes on. But I think for all of us, what it shows is that that just the importance of actually looking at numbers, trying to understand things and being sceptical sometimes when companies are doing fantastic jobs.
I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, it's always, like I say, easy in hindsight. But what were the red flags here, do you think? They were doing very well, weren't they? So was that...
They were. I mean, some people have said, look, because they were doing very well, and it was obviously a difficult consumer environment the last few years, post-Brexit, and just general, you know, wages under pressure. But, you know, even today, you know, I go past... A few days ago, I went past my local Patisserie Valerie. It was rammed, absolutely rammed with people, generally of a slightly older demographic than me and you, but there you go, they've got the money, they're spending it, and they looked all very happy inside there. So I think if you'd have done those sort of soft kind of due diligence things, the sort of things that you and I like to do, Justin, you know, getting out there, seeing things, you would have said tick in the box, because it seemed rammed all the time. Then the second aspect would have been, okay, so if it was busy there, the question then is, what else would you have done? And you'd have said, well, hang on, the best thing then to do would have been to check out the some of the numbers. And the numbers look pretty good as well in terms of profits and cash rate, all sort of hooked up. which looked wonderful. So then the only way I think you could have actually picked it up was to be really super geeky about the numbers. And the way to be super geeky was, if they really did have all that cash on the balance sheet, why were they generating so little, in fact, no real interest on those deposits at all? Now, we know interest rates are very low, but if you got like 10 or 20 million quid in the bank, you're going to generate something. And so as a consequence, that was the way to pick it up. And of course, the reason why they weren't generating any interest was because, of course, they didn't have any money in the bank in the first place. So in order to pick it up, I think you needed to be a super geek. You know, yeah. The sort of the macro stuff would have been looked good. The micro stuff in terms of the shops were rammed. You needed to be a super, super accounting geek to pick it up. And that's only with hindsight knowledge, as you say.
Yeah, and you're right. It's a kind of thing. Now, I don't know what percentage of your average private investor actually goes through cash flow statements and balance sheets, but I suspect it's not very high. And like you say, to pick that up, you'd be quite almost on the accountant, you know, edge of the spectrum, I think, you know, it's towards that end, or like you say, a real sort of value investor looks at that. I mean, I do, you know, through habit, I've always now check out the cash balances of companies, but I don't think I suspect I wouldn't have picked that up, because it says they had they overstated their cash position by 30 million and failed to disclose overdrafts nearly 10 million. So how can you, you know, it's hard to pick that up, isn't it? They're lying, you can't pick it up, really, can you?
That's it. And let's face it, they hoodwinked. Well, we'll obviously see with the arrests and all how it all comes out, but it appears that they hoodwinked the auditors, they hoodwinked serious institutional investors who have massive small cap experienced. You would need to have been a mega geek on it, and actually ultimately have a little bit of hindsight knowledge really about what was going on. You know, it was very tough, and that's why, I mean, this is why it's so important, I think, people like the authorities do crack down on this sort of thing aggressively. And you know, something like this, it will all come out in the wash in terms of the ifs, buts and whatevers, but it seems to me as if clearly a crime was done, and I think there should be custodial sentences, although elsewhere somebody did say to me that it shouldn't be custodial sentences, maybe it should be custodial sentences.
Hey.
As in the custard that appears on many of their patisseries. But there you go. Whatever works, I guess.
Yeah, but do you know what? I know a lot of people probably listening thinking, how can you avoid that? You can't avoid that. See, investing is so hard. But do you know what? It comes down to this. I did sort of 10 videos on YouTube called Lessons I've Learned from Small Cap Investing. But lesson one is something you should apply to everything. And my first lesson, I said, it's not the most exciting, but it's risk management. And I said, you know, if you had a diversified portfolio and you had, you know, patisserie value in that portfolio and it's taken up like 1-2%, 3%, whatever, then that's all you would have lost. So that is your safeguard, isn't it? First and foremost, risk management, exposure, that is how you safeguard against this kind of thing happening, you know?
That's it. And absolutely, diversification is always your best barrier to this sort of thing impacting you. And second thing is, you know, because this is the thing about the stock market, sometimes you just run into extraordinary bad luck where there is a very appearing to be determined fraudster who hoodwinks, as I say, professional advisors, seasoned brokers, experienced fund managers and the like. It doesn't happen very long, but very often. But when it does happen, it's obviously big news. And as I say, the book should be thrown at these people in order to dissuade others from doing similar things. But as a private investor, what you should be doing is diversification, understanding what you're investing in, going back and saying to yourself, you know, are my assumptions correct? Was my rationale correct or not? And, you know, that keeps you out of so many problems. And also, and you know, this is where the technicals come in a little bit. You know, you don't need to be a great fan of charts or whatever. Just run some kind of basic stop loss kind of technique, because every single massive loss, you know, if I look at a portfolio, you know, the shares that are down 80-90%, they're the ones that people are head in hands over. That's what really hassles your performance. As a fund manager, as a private client fund manager or whatever, running your own money or whatever, if you just say it, 20% down or 25% down, whatever your level is, you know, either say double or quits, you know, double up your holding or quit it, something like that. Some basic risk control measure, stop loss type measure. And obviously, if it hits it for a second time after you've doubled up, down a further 25% or whatever your level is, then cut it. Don't be shy about it. You know, you got it wrong, you move on. And as investors, we all have to learn that basic lesson that I'm afraid we're all going to be wrong on a frequent basis. The key is, though, is not to make those losers so impactful upon your portfolio that it just impacts very negatively everything else.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool. Just one thing. They now got 96 shops, apparently. They did have 206. It's Causeway Capital is the private equity company taking it over. But they've run into a bit of a problem last week. This is, on a cost-cutting measure, they replaced butter with margarine in some of their puff pastries.
Yes.
They say they're now reversing that, and they're going back to original. So there we are. You can't substitute, you know, marge for butter. That's the biggest scandal in the accounting problem.
That's right. Well, you know, as I say, that will stop their stores being rammed, won't it? If the taste test doesn't work. But as I say, clearly the one near me is clearly one of the ones that's continuing. And you know, they focus the estate, the new owners, and they see a future. And frankly, at the margin, certainly the ones that I've seen are rammed and busy with people. Good luck to them.
Yeah, more stuff. Okay. Anything else happening, Chris?
Quick one, and not too many numbers out today, but have a look at Porvair. I think the ticker is PVW, and that is a filtration company. So, you know, whenever we talk about filtration and technologies off it, immediately we're in the realm of clean emissions, clean air, clean, you know, sort of clean technology and related. And it's funny.
PRV, yes.
It's not a huge company, market cap of around about £260 million, but a successful one. You know, what struck me in today's numbers was that the tone of them was extremely good. Positive update, very decent bump in both revenues and profits, a quick edging up of the interim dividend too. Underlying tone of the comments were good, saying that, you know, despite world trade angst, and, you know, this is a very international company, three quarters of their sales come from either the States or Asia. You know, only about 10-12% of the sales come from the UK. So a very international company. And they said, despite some world trade angst, actually good demand in areas such as defence and aerospace and industrial still kept them kind of moving forward. And they look forward to the future with optimism. So in terms of the tone, very good. I must admit, it's not a company previously I'd spent much time thinking about. But, you know, just the tone of the comments struck me as interesting. So I did a bit of digging around looking at them. And you have to say, nice theme, nice company, no debt on the balance sheet, and small amount of net cash, which is always an interesting thing, paying a small dividend as well. Very, very, what appears to be a pleasant and sort of core investment-y sort of name, good theme, good balance sheet, etc. You're paying sort of high teens earnings multiples for them based on, if I sort of look at the numbers and think about what their full year profitability might be, which, you know, is not the cheapest. It's certainly at a premium to the broader market. But I have to say, this name appears to be growing. They've had success. And they're confident of it. And certainly I think thematically, clean technology, clean emissions and everything else is something where you're pushing on an open door at the moment. So I was quite impressed. I must admit, I was quite impressed.
Yeah.
Looking forward to listening to the conference call later on today.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you obviously the highlights of a company's news is the best bits. And so that's what they want you to read. You've got to delve further than that. But it's always nice to see double-digit percentage gains on most of the metrics there, you know, because you can't really lie about that, you know. But I like the guy, the CEO is Ben Stocks. He's into stocks, obviously, so I quite like that. So if you're into stocks, yeah, that's nice. Cool. That's PRV, Porvair. Anything else, Chris?
Otherwise, I thought that just while I mentioned they've got some exposure to the defence and aerospace industry, I know it's a very little small smidgen on Chemring, which is one of the few sort of non-mega cap defence names that are still listed in the UK market. They confirmed a small disposal today. you know, they're on the sort of the, they've got a number of very interesting businesses, particularly in sort of counter-missile technology and stuff like that. And I've always been slightly surprised that they've remained independent, because there's been, if you look globally, and obviously you've, in interest of defense or whatever, you've got to look globally, because, you know, you're selling to international markets, and same with Porvair, to be honest, as well. You're selling to international markets, and obviously you're also seeing some consolidation going on at a global level. And you know, you look at sort of the big defense giants within the UK market, the kind of the BAE Systems, the Rolls-Royces, etc. These are mega cap FTSE 100 stalwarts, if you like. Not too many companies kind of lower down, sort of the ultra electronics and whatever. But Chemring strikes me as a funny one. I always thought it would be consolidated up. It hasn't been yet. They've got a newish CEO in there who's trying to sort of shape it up a bit further, making a few disposals. They've just confirmed one, that they've completed one today, which I think is a small bit of positive news. But you have to say, whenever you read about tensions and, you know, what were the headlines all over the weekend, Iran this and Iran that, etc., defence companies can catch a bid. And obviously, as we've seen with things like gold performing, or even things like Bitcoin, maybe as an alternative to kind of conventional investments, defence can be a place to hide in times of strife and uncertainty. You know, not that, you know, we've seen too much of that in terms of pure equity markets recently, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen going forward. So it strikes me Chemring as one to keep an eye on. Because I think, as I say, there's a bit of a turnaround plan going on there, and quite mildly impressed by the newest CEO just kind of quietly going about his business, trying to improve the company.
Yeah, I like the way they just call themselves defence companies. You know, just rather than say bomb maker or offence companies. You know, yeah. I know there's certain funds on there out there that ethical sort of funds won't invest in those kind of things. But part of me feels like that. I think, should I be investing? I know it's needed, of course, but part of me thinks, should I be investing in weapons of destruction? You know.
Yeah, no, it is a difficult one, but I think almost, where do you stop? And then we come into the broader debate about, you know, how clearly science has shown that things like tobacco and alcohol consumption can be a negative. Mm-hmm. We then have sort of the externalities around things such as like the clothing industry and the use of water, et cetera. Where do you stop?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, it's a tough one. And, you know, gambling obviously can be very demerit in many circumstances. It can be fun, but it clearly can be demerit as well. It's a tough one. You know, I think everybody has to draw their own moral line somewhere. Mm-hmm. And clearly, defence, be it defensive or offensively, does play an important geopolitical role in any country's sort of well-being and persistence. You know, we're very fortunate here in the sense that, you know, the old joke about how Britain hasn't been successfully invaded since 1066. Mm-hmm. You know, we can debate whether that's technically true or not, but, you know, we clearly live in a remarkably stable country. Many other, if you have international listeners, I'm sure they're nodding, thinking, yeah, you know, you think about what's happened in our country over the last 50, 100, 200 years, you know, and relate. And that kind of concentrates the mind a little bit. So I think defence is important. And in terms of stock market investments, I think, though, the greatest kind of debate around it is the fact that the purchasers are so concentrated. You know, it is the Ministry of Defence, it's the Department of Defence in the States, it's various other important governments around the world. Very lumpy contracts, very few, if you like, purchasers. And so you can get a reliance on certain groups and areas. Clearly, Ministry of Defence for the UK is ultra important. Hence, it can mean, you know, you get sort of sometimes very changeable results based on an individual contract sort of going wrong or being wound down or something like that. So, you know, there are other issues investing in the area. But my observation is that it can be a good
minefield.
It can be a minefield. That's certainly true. That's absolutely true. I should have thought of that one myself.
And I wonder if there's a non-ethical fund where people don't care, just everything that's regarded, you know.
There used to be the Sin Fund, didn't there? I think that was a US invention, which did rather well because, of course, it played into the consumer themes around the tobacco investment and alcoholic beverage investment and related, which were particularly successful kind of in much of this century, actually, up to the last couple of years, where the wheels have come off a bit of from tobacco and others. So, the Sin Fund, I think, in the States did rather well. So there you go.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that, fella, and we'll catch up next week, or even maybe even later. I know you're travelling late this week, so maybe we'll try and hook up a time, but we'll see. But speak soon.
Sounds good. All right, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is The Crypto Trader. That's the name of his book. It's Glenn Goodman. You're right, fella.
That's the name of my book. Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right. Do you know what? I was... It's funny, I saw a couple of people saying the Bitcoin won't get to 10,000 because it didn't get to 20,000. Everyone hyped about 20,000. It didn't quite get there, apparently. But it's flown past $10,000, hasn't it? And I think it touched 11. But why is it? I mean, we've been talking about this last few weeks. We've said there's behind the scenes now, with less hype, you know, than there was previously. There's been bigger companies, you know, institutions that you would think would avoid crypto are now starting to adopt blockchain, you know, and that kind of technology. So the technology I've always seen as a useful technology because, you know, it's just the currencies that are using this technology are very questionable. But Bitcoin, it's doing very well, isn't it?
It is doing very, very well. It's rushed past the $10,000 level, rushed past the $11,000, but then reversed itself, perhaps temporarily. I mean, the main upward trend is still very much intact. So, you know, I'm the kind of person who I don't sell right at the top generally. I'm a trend follower, so I tend to buy a little bit late and sell a little bit late once I'm sure that the trend is over. But I can't help, because we've got this parabolic rise going on in Bitcoin, I can't help but just keep looking, where's the top? Where's the top? Like I did at the end of 2017. I mean, that's, you know, that's how I was allowed to write a book by a publisher, was because I'd correctly called the top of the market in 2017 or thereabouts and sold all my Bitcoin and my cryptocurrency. So I wasn't one of those people who held on throughout a sort of 90%, 80 or 90% decline. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm looking for the top, but I ain't seeing the top. That's the thing. There are no signs from a kind of technical charting perspective. It's even after it came off its peak at sort of 11,300 or so, and it's come down as we speak to around about 10,800. And yet, if you look at the chart, it just doesn't look bearish at all. So there could well be even more gas in the tank, which is kind of astonishing to think, because it was at $3,500 just a few months ago, and now we're, you know, taking aim at $20,000. It's worth bearing in mind that last time Bitcoin hit $10,000 back in 2017, it then hit $20,000 just 16 days later.
Yeah. It didn't quite get to 20,000, did it?
It just well, it was 19,900 and something. You're right. You're quite right. It didn't quite get there, which is why, as you say, because people are always looking back at history and going, well, it didn't hit 20,000 last time, so it won't quite make 10,000 this time. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, history, as they say, it rhymes, but what is it? It doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Yeah.
I think people often put too much store in what's happened before and that it's got to repeat itself again. You know?
Do you know what? We're at an interesting level right now, coming up to it right now, because when Bitcoin fell, a massive fall of that 19,000 odd, close to 20,000, and it basically, you know, within what time period is that? Basically, within a few months, it went from 19,000 odd down to 6,000. That was in February. And they bounced then, and they had a bounce, and they did a double top at 11,500. And so we are now, well, we're 10,800. So, and it didn't, it tried to break that level twice, and it didn't get what got above it. So it'd be interesting to see if it can break that previous resistance, because people probably thought it was going back up then, you know, back towards 20,000, but it didn't quite get past that. Twice it tried that, and it didn't, and it went down. But do you know what's funny?
Yeah,
though,
I think it is a significant level. I agree with you. There are a lot of people, you know, just looking at sort of Twitter and so on, because it's always useful to gauge the public sentiment. And so I try to do so, and a lot of people are talking about that level and talking about that resistance from last time round, as you say. So, yeah, there will be a lot of selling pressure at that point. But as I say, Bitcoin is looking so strong now, it wouldn't surprise surprise me if it busted through that level as well.
Yeah, but you know what? I think people are missing the point now, though. I mean, the people who become rich off Bitcoin are either the people who had a lot of money, you know, and doubled their money, you know, from a high level, or the early investors. And you're talking about you've got, you know, several thousand percent. But I can't see you getting rich anymore from Bitcoin from here, unless, like I say, you're rich already and you put, you know, sort of a couple of million in right now, and then it doubles and you get double that. Because even if it goes to $100,000, what's it now? $100,000 for Bitcoin. That's 10 times. But for an average punter, let's say, what have you got? Disposable cash. How much have they got? I'd say not more than 10 grand. So you're going to make 100 grand off that. But that's not going to make you rich, and you can't retire for the rest of life with 100 grand. So I don't think the multiples there anymore. The fast, quick money has already been made when people are buying Bitcoin at, like, you know, $10. Those are the rich people, aren't they, really?
You're quite right. Though there are also a lot of traders. It's obviously a pretty niche thing, but they do margin trading on various unregulated Bitcoin exchanges where you can, times 50 your money, or even times 100 your money. So, yeah, so exactly.
I made a mistake.
Betting on speed, if you see what I mean.
I've made a mistake, Dave, of confusing an investor with a Bitcoin trader. And, of course, you can do spread betting on Bitcoin and get several multiples per point, can't you? So, yeah, I suppose
Well, the thing is that there are strict laws about that in Europe now. So the spread bettors in Europe, the traditional ones like IG and CMC and so on, are only allowed now, I think, to offer two times the size of the money that you put in. So, you know, if you invest 3,000, then you can effectively take a £6,000 bet on Bitcoin. Something like that is as exciting as it gets in the UK. But I'm talking about the unregulated exchanges that are widely used by Bitcoin traders throughout the entire world. And when I say Bitcoin traders, I'm not talking professionals. I'm talking just, you know, ordinary punters, little, you know, young men in their pants who know a lot about coding and got into Bitcoin trading mainly. But these exchanges allow them to margin trade at 50 times or 100 times the size of the money that they put in. But, you know, obviously that is a relatively minority pursuit. So your point still holds that even for most people, even if they buy 10 grand's worth of Bitcoin, it's not going to allow them to retire. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people put in more than that, because a lot of millennials truly believe that this is what is going to make them rich. I see them talking about it all the time online. Mm-hmm. They think this is the thing. This is like digital gold to them, a store of value, which is debatable, obviously, because the value goes up and down so dramatically. But that's kind of how they see it, as like, you know, the young people's version of gold. And there was a time when gold bugs, I guess particularly around 1980, when the price was absolutely rocketing, when young gold bugs would have believed that gold was going to make them rich and allow them to retire on a yacht forever.
Yeah. Well, do you know what's odd, though? It's funny the hype surrounding this and people not really doing the maths, like you say, the multiples, looking at, because most people, I assume, will try and just buy Bitcoin rather than leverage. So you're right. I mean, what multiple can they get? How can they put down? I had someone text me yesterday I haven't spoken to probably in about 6 years. I mean, last time I spoke to them was, I think, just via text a couple of years back when they were trying to get into stocks and shares. But literally, for a couple of years, they haven't contacted me, and they said, "Hello, is this still your number?" I said, "Yeah, you're right." She said, "Yeah, what's happening with Bitcoin?" And literally, you know, they've been pulled into the hype surrounding Bitcoin. It seems to be this, you know, it is shiny thing that people believe can set them up for life, don't they? What is it about Bitcoin? I suppose because it's had a massive move from where it came from nothing to $20,000, you know, then I suppose it still has that, you know, that ring of fake, you know, sort of wealth around it. This is your golden egg, when in fact it's probably not. If you do the basic maths on where you think it will go, I mean, let's be honest, is there anyone predicting $100,000 per Bitcoin?
There are some people predicting it. For example, one trader who I've been watching closely for many years, a guy called Peter Brandt, who lives in America. He's got a big following on Twitter, and he He's one of the few kind of online traders who I respect, because he's been at it for 45 years. He's in his 70s. He's got very strong trading rules and is a very consistent money maker as a result of his kind of discipline. And he was, whilst he doesn't necessarily believe that Bitcoin will trounce the dollar or any of those kind of big stories, he's just a pure trader. And he's predicting 100,000 just on the basis of the price action, nothing else, not the fundamentals. As we say, there barely are any fundamentals. But he's seen this kind of price action before. Well, he was bullish during the boom of 2017 and was kind of proved right then. And sort of saw the top of it as well, like I did. But now he's predicting 100,000 again. You know what? It's one of those really tricky ones where, I'm a natural cynic. I'm a natural skeptic of all things bright and shiny, like you. But at the same time, I suffer from FOMO, like everybody else, fear of missing out.
We wouldn't be human. Otherwise, that's the trouble. It's trying to resist those emotions, isn't it? That's the problem.
It is. I mean, I've got Bitcoin, but at the same time, I'm tempted to, at this stage, even though it's looking absolutely ridiculously kind of vertical, the curve, I've got that fear of missing out like everyone else. And I'm thinking, okay, so I'm going to make a lot of money if Bitcoin goes higher, but shouldn't I try and be one of those people who retires on a yacht by going all in? It's like there's something in my head that's trying to tell me to break all my trading rules. I've just written a book about how to trade sensibly trick crypto, and yet there's a little demon in my head going, forget all that. What if it goes to 100,000 and you're left behind, Glenn? That would be tragic.
Do you know what? That's exactly that. It's amazing. That's why humans will. And I said, Warren Buffett can write a book if he wants, telling you how to get rich, how he's done it. And you can read it, you can learn it back to front. But do you know what? Sticking to it is a different thing. And I've done 10 lessons on YouTube, but 10 lessons I've learned from investing in small cap stocks. And the last one is discipline. And yet, I say in that, I said, it's all fair and well writing down your rules. What another thing is completely stick to them, because when emotions get involved, you just say, oh, it just didn't matter. And I've had this rule about not going over 10% exposure. My entire portfolio value, not putting more than 10% of your entire value into one stock. I've done that a couple of times, gone over that, and just somehow made some kind of convenient excuse, different this time.
How we're feeling about Bitcoin, isn't it? Different this time.
I've just seen that Peter Brand you talked about on Twitter just now. I looked at his one of his tweets. He did say $100,000 is on, and he's got a little spreadsheet there as if to prove why. I don't understand what it says, really. But because it's in the spreadsheet form, you just tend to agree with it. And he's got a chart next to that as well. So he's got a chart, he's got a spreadsheet. He must know what he's talking about. So, buy into Bitcoin. There we are.
All he's doing really is projecting back to the party. He's doing what I kind of warned about earlier on in this conversation, which is that he's going, well, it went parabolic last time. Yeah. It went parabolic the time before. It'll probably go parabolic again, is kind of the way he's thinking.
Yeah. Are you hold Bitcoin at the moment, do you?
I've got some, yeah, and so as I say, I will make a lot of money if it continues to go up, but just not, I want to be one of those people who makes life-changing sums of money. Yeah, at the same time, I know it's just not sensible, and it's just so strange, isn't it? Like you said, it's all very well writing down the rules, and in fact, I've said to people before, look, I've done pretty well as a trader, but the whole point was my little backstory is that I was able to retire in my 30s. Yeah. Off money that I'd made trading. I was making more money trading than I was as a business correspondent at ITV, and I was able to give up my job and live what was my vision of a dream life to some degree, without being spectacularly wealthy, which was never really my aim. But at the same time, I do say to people that I would be a lot richer if I always had followed my own rules, the rules that are written in my book, the rules that I've been telling, spouting to people online for years and years and years. If I hadn't kept breaking those rules myself, then I probably would have been able to retire, in my 20s or something like that. Yeah. It's the rules work. My rules work, but my rules are nothing special. A lot of rules work. There are a lot of different ways, as to make money money trading consistently and make a lot of money trading consistently, mm-hmm. to make far more than fund managers do. If only we humans could follow our rules. I guess that's what algorithms are for, isn't it? But then when people rely on algorithms, they tend to pull their money out when the algorithms start performing badly, which is exactly what you shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. So human error tends to intervene even when people are using algorithmic systems or giving their money over to an algorithmic fund manager.
Yeah, and you know what? And the thing is, well, with the rules, is we tend to make them in the cold light of day when you've done a bit of back research of what actually happened, and so you're weighing up actually in a calculated fashion, objectively, what actually played out, and then the thing that breaks this is when you're actually in the real time in the market, and normally you make the rules when the market's not open, you're not looking at investments. When you're actually in the market and you're actually making decisions, your emotions get involved, and that's the only thing that messes up your rules, isn't it? So
it's
almost like the less, and that's why we have them. And now again, I do have, you know, I try and automate trades, you know, or investments that I have, because I know if you go, so I put initial trade investment in, and I say okay, I'm always prepared for the share price to drop a little bit, but if I've done research and I'm happy with the fundamentals, I will scale down, because I think okay, this company now is below its net assets. I think it's a good deal, so it's a bargain. The cheaper it gets, the bigger bargain I'm picking up. So I'm happy that, and as long as I've done lots of research, I understand that, and so I'll automate. But sometimes when I don't do that, I'll just chuck in a couple of couple of buys here, and then I'll buy some more, then I realize, oh, hang on, I'm over 10% over the stock already, and yet the stock price is flying, and it's all likelihood it will come back, and I'll be in the red then. So breaking the rules is all about emotion, and if you can distance yourself from that and automate a certain amount of your work, I think it helps and improves your work, you know. It gets better.
It does. It's just with my experience with working with real life traders, when they automate and when they have a completely automated system, a black box even, it is, as I said before, the problem is that even then they will give in to the temptation to overrule and interfere with the black box if it's not doing well. In fact, you're possibly even more likely to, because the thing is that when you're a discretionary trader, if you have a bad period, you don't necessarily change the way you trade or withdraw all your money from trading. You just think, oh, you know, you might feel a bit bad about yourself, but you think, okay, well, this has worked before and I'm just having a bit of a bad period, I'll carry on. When it's an automated system that starts having a bad period, and of course all systems have good and bad periods, but when a fully automated system has a bad period, because it's kind of separate from you as a human being, you start to think to yourself, there's something wrong with the system, there's something wrong with the algorithm, I've got to get my money out while there still is any. And as a result, people tend to, rather like they do with fund managers, when the fund manager's doing well, people pour in their money just towards the end of the fund manager's good period. Then the fund manager starts doing badly and everybody withdraws their money from that particular fund just as it's about to start doing well again. And that's how people, you know, don't make the most of their returns. And it's the same with algorithms. If it's an outside agent, like an algorithm or a fund manager, then we get even more scared when they perform badly, and we're even more likely to break the rules and start taking our money out at exactly the wrong time.
So I'm going to ask you a question here now. So if my friend who contacted me, in fact, she also wants to get into stock shares, but what would you advise her now? She asked me about Bitcoin, and I just said, I don't get too involved with crypto, actually, and I'm more into stock shares. Oh yeah, you're doing that. And but what would you say to her right now? Because the ironic thing is, like I say, the worst time to buy is when there's lots of attention around, and that's normally at the top of the market. You know, when there's loads of attention, you find, you know, it breaks out from the normal traders. It finds its way down the pub, and people talk about it, and you get people who don't normally trade or invest getting involved, and that's when the retail crowd becomes bigger and bigger. And then the hype builds up, and everyone tells each other. And so when it gets a lot of attention, that's when people. When it gets no attention, that's when you should be investing or buying or trading. You know, but what would you say to her now, right now, when she'd contacted me and asked me about Bitcoin? What would your advice be?
My advice would be the same as yours. I've got to agree with you there, because today, if you look at the news, okay, so Bitcoin, it's not like the heyday where Bitcoin was actually making top headlines. It was getting on actual front pages of newspapers and the BBC and so on. We're not quite there yet, but nonetheless, if you look today, you'll see, you know, the Guardian are talking about it, the Independent have written an article. They're going to write another article and quote me later on. Forbes quoted me. Who else are talking about it today? Lots of the major newspapers, even the Daily Mail had something about it. And it's, when it gets to that stage, I quite agree with you. It's generally a sign that we've hit at least a temporary market top. I'd be surprised if this was the end of this new Bitcoin bull market, but we've been overdue a correction for some time, and I couldn't in all good conscience recommend to your friend, after we've already had a rise in Bitcoin where it's almost quadrupled and the curve is now vertical. I mean, how could I or you possibly recommend to this lady that she invest in Bitcoin at this particular moment in time? Yeah. I don't think we could we? Even if, I mean, you know, it could go higher. It really could. And then she'll be annoyed with you and you'll be annoyed with me and we'll all kick each other. But
that's the trouble. Yeah, go on.
Well, just but, you know, we can't recommend her to do that, can
no,
we?
No, not, exactly. And that's why I always say,
not at this particular moment.
Yeah, and that's why I always say, you know, you've got to take responsibility and to for your own investments and trades. And to do that, you have to learn and research. And while you will lose money along the way, but make sure it's small amounts, and that's risk management. I'd suggest, actually, to her in the meantime, do you know what? I'll do this. I haven't done this. I say, if you want to get into crypto trading, I know a guy who's quite good at this. He's been on the podcast several times. He's called Glenn. He's got a good book out. It's worth reading that. By the time you finish that, I guarantee the Bitcoin will be back down to a level that's worth buying at.
That's better advice. I think you're right.
Buy my book. Don't buy Bitcoin. Buy my book. Yeah, that's
but like I said, last time Bitcoin hit 10,000, it then hit 20,000 within 16 days. So in 16 days' time, I don't know. Your friend might not like you quite as much as she did before, but yeah. what can you do? You can't tell her to buy it now.
Listen, she calls herself a friend, but she's only contacts me when the market gets hot in crypto. So
market friend.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll recommend the book. Glenn, thanks for the chat there on Bitcoin. We'll catch up hopefully later in the week or next week. All right?
Absolutely. Speak to you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Emotion Group. It's a decent RNS today, but you know, installing some of the kit in one of the biggest aquariums in the world, and yet the share price is down. It's a bit of a bearish market today. It's a horrible Monday, Sunday, what have we got? Summer Monday, you know, in the middle of June. Liquidity is bad. IMMO, they're building a decent business there. At four, Integumin, down also 3%, and decent news last week. Skin is thicker there. At three, Nanoco. It's the, the dead cat bounce trade on Nanoco. Nano's ticker there. At two, it's E-Therapeutics, ETX. It's being pushed a bit on social media, I see. Number one, most followed company, up 14.6%. It's a company I covered yesterday in my video. And by all means, if you haven't checked out my YouTube channel, just do a search. Say, Justin Waite, Investing, YouTube, just put that in Google, it'll come up. Hit subscribe, hit that bell. Most important thing of all, the bell, to be notified when a video comes out. I covered Venn yesterday. They're up quite nicely today, 14%. VENN, of course, this week is a general meeting to pass the RTO of Open Orphan. I had Cattle on the podcast last week, and very ambitious, clear plan of what he wants to do. Take this company to a 100 million market cap. Then, he said, it starts to get interesting. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Hemogenics, a development of APBHC. Thor Mining, high-grade tungsten results confirmed. At three, Optibiotics, manufacturing agreement with Agropur. At two, Creswick Gold, resource geologist appointment. And number one most liked RNS came from Union Jack Oil, investor presentation. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, if you use the Vox Markets app and you get value from that, then please pay us back by going to your app store and give us a decent rating and review. Thanks very much. Muchus appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.